person that has most profoundly affected Western civilization after Jesus Christ is the Blessed Virgin Mary. And that's not just my opinion, that's the opinion of one of the most well-respected British historians in contemporary times. Welcome to MaryCast. This is Dr. Mark Miravalli, Professor of Theology and Mariology at the Franciscan University of Steubenville. And I want to read to you a statement which is contained in the classic work Civilization by Kenneth Clark. Now, Kenneth Clark is a non-Catholic historian. But listen to what he says just based on the facts of history about the role of the Blessed Virgin Mary. He says, and I quote, Mary is, quote, the supreme protectress of civilization. She had taught a race of tough and ruthless barbarians the virtues of tenderness and compassion. The great cathedrals of the Middle Ages were her dwelling places upon earth. In the Renaissance, while remaining the Queen of Heaven, she became also the human mother in whom everyone could recognize qualities of warmth and love and approachability. Now imagine the feeling of a simple-hearted person, a Spanish peasant, an Italian artisan, on hearing the news that the northern heretics were insulting the Virgin, desecrating her sanctuaries, pulling down or decapitating her images. He must have felt something deeper than shock and indignation. He must have felt that some part of his whole emotional life was being threatened, and he would have been right. Referring to Israel, Islam, and the Protestant North that conceive their gods as male, Clark further notes, quote, the all-male religions have produced no religious imagery. In most cases, they have positively forbidden it. The great religious art of the world is deeply involved with the female principle. Of course, the ordinary Catholic who prayed to the Virgin was not conscious of any of this, nor was he or she interested in the really baffling theological problems. He simply knew that the heretics wanted to deprive him of that sweet, compassionate, approachable being who would intercede for him as his mother might have interceded for a hard master, end quote. So Clark is telling us that there was no one who had a stronger, a more beneficial impact on the development, the refinement of manners, the understanding of woman, the understanding of person, human dignity, than Our Lady did. And this is confirmed by the words of Dante, who says in the Paradiso, quote, with living mortals, you are a living spring of hope. Lady, you are so great and have such worth that if anyone seeks out grace and flies not to thee, his longing is like flight without wings. This is Dante reflecting the truth that Our Lady is the mediatrix of all graces. So, devotion to Mary is simply a historical fact, and it has had a huge impact on Western civilization. What is devotion to Mary, and what is it not? Let's talk about the nature of Marian devotion, because many, many individuals and many, many Christians have the wrong understanding of what the Catholic Church does teach about Mary. Indeed, noble, holy, immaculate, Queen of Heaven and Earth, co-redemptrix, mediatrix, and advocate, but always human. Perfect human, immaculate human, but always human. And so, what is the difference of, from a Catholic perspective, of how we have devotion to Jesus and how we have devotion to Mary? Well, for distinctions, we go to St. Thomas Aquinas. And St. Thomas tells us in the Summa, as a principal reference, in what's called the Secunda Secundae, the second part of the second part of the Summa, question 103, article 4. He tells us a critical distinction between what is referred to as latria and what is referred to as dulia. Okay. First and foremost, what is latria? Latria, St. Thomas Aquinas tells us, is the devotion appropriate to God alone. As he would say, it is the manifestation of submission and the acknowledgement of dependence shown towards the excellence of an uncreated person. Well, why should an uncreated person receive this higher, or I should properly say, highest form of devotion? Because Thomas says, due to absolute lordship. This is the creator of heaven and earth, and only the creator of heaven and earth deserves a form of worship which includes sacrifice. So latria is the Greek word that would signify devotion which is proper only to God alone. This is distinguishing, Thomas says, from what is called dulia. Dulia, the Greek word meaning servitude. Dulia is the manifestation of reverence and acknowledgement of excellence due to created excellence. And what does that mean? That means, look, if something is created and it's excellent, that also deserves our honor. Quite frankly, we do this all the time in the civic arena. We give gold medals for created excellence in the terms of sports endeavors. We give honor societies and honor awards to people who excel intellectually. Indeed, our civilization does give honor to created excellence. So why not God? And St. Thomas Aquinas tells us further that those who excel in holiness are the saints. And the saints who enter the communion of saints have the power to intercede on behalf of the rest of humanity. God has given them this power in light of their created excellence in love of God. So dulia is the category of, what we say, devotion, of love, of respect, of honor to beings who have created excellence in the order of their holiness and unity with God, i.e. the saints. So latria, unique of God. Dulia, appropriate for saints. Where does the Mother of Jesus fit into that scenario? Well, the Mother of Jesus receives, St. Thomas says, a form of devotion that is certainly under latria, but beyond dulia. And St. Thomas calls that hyperdulia. Hyperdulia is different in nature and degree to the devotion that the rest of the saints should receive. Now, I want to say that again, it's different in nature and degree. Doesn't mean just more of dulia, it's a specific form of devotion that is unique to the Blessed Virgin Mary. Now, why? Why would Mary, of all the angels and saints, receive a special form and level of devotion? Well, there are endless reasons, but I'm going to give you three big reasons, three foundational reasons. Number one, that Mary alone is the Mother of God. Mary alone gave flesh to the Word made flesh. No other creature could ever tout to be something close to what Mary gives to God becoming man. So Mary alone has, as Suarez says, an intrinsic relation to the hypostatic union. Number two, Mary alone is the full of grace, the gratia plena in Latin, the kikeratomene in Greek, the one who's been completely transformed in grace as an action completed in the past. That is the moment of her conception. The saints excel in grace, but Mary alone has the fullness of grace. That means from the moment of her conception, she is completely united to Father, Son, and Holy Spirit in the life and love of the Trinity. So this puts her away, apart, something completely separate in the order of her created excellence. Number three, Mary had perfect obedience to the will of God. And we're going to talk about these qualities in our upcoming programs as well, but this means, as the Council of Trent teaches, that Mary never committed venial sin. In all of her life, the Blessed Virgin Mary never, in the slightest way, offended God. So imagine what that means for us. How almost incomparable it is that this Immaculate Human was, first of all, Mother of God, full of grace, and never, ever offended God in even the slightest way. This calls us to give her a special honor, and that's hyperdulia. This is Dr. Mark Miravalli saying thanks for being with us at MaryCast. More on this as we continue. God bless.